more than Sarah Palin? Join CITR's Current Affairs Coordinator Alex DeBoer every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. in room 2514 in the AMS Nest to learn best practices for covering local current affairs topics for radio. The weekly training sessions will cover writing for radio, determining newsworthiness, media ethics, interviewing, writing balanced stories, and more.
This winter, Vancouver will enjoy the customary drizzle, fog, and perhaps a modicum of the white stuff. On the other hand, for $195, you can enjoy sunshine of Mexico. Mexico.
Wherever you are, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Vancouver, UBC, on the unceded territory of the Coast Salish, Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Or just flop out under...
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca. And fading out in the background there, that was Stego Saris with Consider Transitions off of her 2017 album Simple Subtraction, which dropped on Bandcamp this summer. And she just packaged up the CD of that and it is out on the mailing list for campus radio stations across Canada. So watch for that one and check out her work on Bandcamp. Good pal out of Calgary right there. You're tuned into Intersections here on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory here at the beautiful University of British Columbia campus. My name is Mel Woods, this year's Gender Empowerment Collective Coordinator here at CITR. I work together with a group of fabulous volunteers to produce this weekly spoken word program for all of you out there in radio land, featuring current affairs issues dealing with intersectional feminism. It's pretty rad. It's pretty great. And we have a jam-packed show for you folks today. It is going to be a stellar one, if you ask me. I'm just absolutely delighted at the lineup that we have here today. First up, you're going to be hearing from collective member Addison, who sat down for an interview about gender equity and ultimate frisbee, which is just beyond cool. That's like, when she pitched it, I was delighted. I want to hear it. I've listened to it already. I'm excited to hear it again as we sit here in the booth. And then later in the show, we're going to continue our kind of theme, like not really theme, but like series, I'll say, that Maxime has been putting together this semester about witchcraft. This week, she'll be talking to the same person she spoke with last week about cultural appropriation. So that one should be great as well. And of course, at the end of the show, we'll kind of just chat about what's up in the world these days. I think it's pretty darn neat that the Silence Breakers were named Times Person of the Year, and so I probably will have a few thoughts about that. But we're going to listen to a few more tracks and then get right into Addison's interview. This next track we're going to hear, it's from Robotalkie and Claire Ridgely. The track is Ghost Boy, and enjoy that one. And keep it locked here on CITR.
Thank you. I have a right to safety. I have a right to education. I have a right to my culture. Kids like me need to know about child rights and earlier age what to do about it.
Today, the Canadian Council of Child and Youth Advocates asks you to make every day a day to stand up for children's rights in your life. If you are a young person who needs the help of an advocate, you can also find the advocate for your own province listed on ccya.ca.
Let's see here. God. Oh.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Oh. Everybody. God, this is awful.
Isn't there anything? Anything? Anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
Everybody. Hello everyone, my name is Addison from the Gender Empowerment Collective, and I'm here today with Laurel Oldershaw to talk about two really rad things. We're going to talk about gender equity, and we're going to talk about Ultimate Frisbee. Welcome to the studio today, Laurel. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So we're going to do a little introduction. If you could tell us who you are, what you do, what's your life.
Cool. My name is Laurel Oldershaw. I use she, her pronouns. I'm born and raised in Berkeley, California. Went out to school on the East Coast in the States, and I'm now out here at UBC for my MBA.
Cool. And I heard you just about finished up that program.
Yeah, this is our last week of project, so I'm very excited.
Sweet. Congrats.
Thank you.
So can you tell us a bit about about Ultimate and about Upwind? So if you can tell us about the sport and the community of Ultimate Frisbee, and then also what is the company Upwind Ultimate?
Definitely. So to start with Ultimate Frisbee, it's this crazy sport. You use a little plastic disc. You have 7-on-7 on essentially a football or soccer field, a little bit narrower. And it's essentially glorified keep away. So if I'm on offense, I want to make sure I only pass to my teammates, and we're going to score by catching the disc in the end zone. And similarly, if we drop it and the defense gets a turn, then defense becomes offense. And they start playing, they start going the other way. You play to points rather than time, so it's a little different. And it's also self-officiated, which means you make your own calls. So if we're playing against each other and I think that you fouled me, it's technically a non-contact sport. And if I think that you had contact, then I can call foul. And you have the option to contest or no contest. So essentially to disagree with my call, contest, or agree with the call, no contest, and then depending on the rule, the play resets and we continue on. So it's got that cool aspect to it. Upwind Ultimate is a company that I founded to increase the value of women in Ultimate. So right now in the Ultimate Frisbee landscape, we see, particularly in the U.S., where most of Ultimate, I wouldn't say most of Ultimate is played, but where kind of the most public elite Ultimate is right now in the world, and the most publicized. And there's used to be two professional leagues, the AUDL, the American Ultimate Disc League, and the MLU, Major League Ultimate. And the MLU actually folded this last December, so in 2016. And the AUDL is going into their seventh year. And both leagues have just been men's leagues. One exception of Jesse Schaffner from Nashville, playing with Nashville Nightwatch. So Ultimate Frisbee right now, for people who play, is primarily primarily pay to play. So I play on a summer team, and I'm paying all of my fees to compete. I'm paying all of my fees for practice space. I'm paying all of my fees to travel to compete, as well as all of my fees to feed myself when I'm competing, which is, as you know, a significantly more amount for athletes out there. For non-athletes, we're just burning a ton more calories. And if you want to excel, then, you know, there's higher priced foods and more nutritional based options that do show benefits in performance that, you know, are enticing for athletes, and especially people who want to be really competitive top athletes. So that all adds up to about $2,500 on average per player per summer. The AUDL provides that opportunity for men to play at no cost. So they get about 16 games in, they get flown to these games, they get housed at these games, they get food at these games, they get free jerseys. So, and most of them are getting paid. Some teams are claiming that they're not paying because at the moment the AUDL is losing money. But if you just take that look at how much they're getting free compared to how much women in the sport are having to play just to even get to that same, or just to even have access to that same level of competition, it's a huge imbalance. So Upwin Ultimate actually started a couple years ago from a question I had of what would it take to create a women's pro league. That led me to my MBA. It led me to creating something called the National Ultimate League, which started off kind of as that question of let's just, you know, have a league that really centers women. And there was a little bit of a pushback from there. And so we kind of took a step back, rebranded to Upwind, recentered to this mission of increasing the value of women in Ultimate, and really taking a dive into gender equity. I will say on that note that one of the things we try to be very vigilant about is having gender equity not be so centered on the experience of white women and white feminism. We have a tendency, I'm personally white myself and very queer, to kind of hone in on what my imbalances are rather than what's actually happening in society. And we, you know, we have this idea of the 77 cents to the dollar comparison between women and men and what they make in business. And that's just for white women, right? Then you start to go to black women at 67%. Hispanic women, it goes even lower to 63%. And that's, so there's just such a wide range of what we're looking at. And when I say to increase the value of women in Ultimate, it's this idea to take a look at women as a whole, as well as trying to expand that spectrum. So I believe the future is non-binary. And, you know, that's language that we haven't yet developed yet in the sports sphere, because the sports sphere is so binary. So it's hard to kind of promote that out there. But also, you know, one of the really big things we're taking into consideration when we say gender equity from Upwind's perspective is how intersectional are we being in race, class, ableism, gender identity, and as well as how are we making sure that the words we're using aren't then putting people into this box of womanhood, even though that's kind of what we're trying to promote. So it's a business that I'd like to say, you know, our big thing is safety, growth, and accountability, and continually reflecting on that.
Yeah, that's really great. Thank you for that, Laurel. So would you say part of what you talked about were a few of the key goals of your company, Upwind Ultimate?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, going back to, like, my dreams of a women's pro league or a pro league that doesn't just center around cis men is to really look at this dynamic opportunity to be had at the pro league level. So the thing about the sports economics, or the thing about sports economics and the sports entertainment industry, is that it's not so much what happens on the field, it's how we consume it. So the culture of sports really comes from this masculine, misogynistic perspective, you know, centers around men on the fields, really safe for men in the crowds, really safe for men watching in bars, not always safe for women and trans people and gender non-binary people. And so to me, and I don't know if this is specifically the goal of Upwind, but my personal goal is to open up that culture, that sports culture, so that everybody feels safe to be a part of it. Upwind right now is taking that on by focusing on the education aspect. So we're offering online courses. The first one is called Understanding Whiteness. We're going to have some more courses in the spring around white feminism, around being trans and trans experience in sports and how do we expand there, as well as some very basic things of how do you create more equity on a mixed field. One of the cool things about Ultimate is we do have a mixed gender version of the sport. So it's in three divisions right now, men's, women's, and mixed. In that mixed gender, we still, though, out of the seven people on the field, tend to see an imbalance of four men versus three women. And so that's another thing that we're looking at.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you were with that highlighting the gender binary, so with the three divisions, you have a binary of women, men, and then in the mixed one designated as women and men as well. So I was curious, something that I see you often do that you did just now when you introduced yourself in the beginning of our talk, and then also what I see you do on the field, if you're leading or coaching or just a player as well, is you ask folks to introduce themselves with their gender pronouns. So I'm wondering, what does a practice like that aspire to do within the Ultimate community as far as the gender binary?
Yeah, I think it just breaks down assumptions, right? You know, everybody deserves to be called by the pronouns they want to use. And for the most part, I would say those match our assumed images for people. However, that's not 100% true across the board. And I think as we begin to see a future that is non-binary, that'll become less and less true across the board. And one of the interesting things about doing this in practices and through interviews is that the majority of the people I talk to, I would say almost 90%, don't actually know, they haven't heard pronouns before. So they're kind of like, female, gender, I don't know so much. And because of that, it's just kind of been an interesting practice to say, hey, this is something that people care about. It can open up the space for a lot of different people out there. And, you know, it's a very small thing. And I think it also just makes people reflect on their pronouns. Pronouns have so much weight, right? If you want to use they, it's kind of weird for a lot of people because it's new. And that kind of tends to make people uncomfortable. And that's something we just have to watch for. Particularly, I mean, language is huge. So it just kind of adds to creating more safer language that really opens up spaces.
Mm-hmm, definitely. I think your note on language is really important and how that's used to disrupt normalized and status quo of gender binary. So just taking the moment for people to be a little uncomfortable and to make space for others that are not typically given that comfort and safety is really important.
Yeah. I will say one thing that I've seen the VUL, Vancouver Ultimate League, do, and I think the policy is similar, mm-hmm. is that it's not so much four men, four women, but four of one gender and three of another gender.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is still not entirely what we're going for when we want it to be completely open based on gender. And I've talked to Jenna Weiner about this a little bit. She's an incredible activist, trans woman out of Reno. And she suggested this rule of doing 3-3 floater. So you have three of one gender, three of another gender, and one floater. And for the most part, the floater can be whoever. And then the genders are pretty much the same. And one thing, too, that hasn't yet been explored in the mixed division at most levels is that we still feel constricted to mark the people of our same gender rather than pushing ourselves or being open to marking different genders and just kind of like seeing what they would do. This actually just happened at a Team Canada U24 mixed game. We had a scrimmage between old Team Canada players from the world's levels, the adult levels playing against these juniors. And a woman marked up against a U24 guy, and he just kind of froze because it never happened to him before. And so it's kind of, there's little things like that that I think can really push us beyond this idea of gender binary and more into, okay, we're just all here to play sports. But it's that initial discomfort and reaction that's still, you know, we're still really working through that as a society and as a sport.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So we kind of talked a lot about the work that has to be done yet in the community, and not just in Ultimate, but that is part of the societal complex of gender inequity. And so what's something that you're hopeful or aspirational for, or what's your favorite nugget of Ultimate that you see a lot of hope in, that you really enjoy as a player, as an activist, as a coach?
Yeah, I would say not so much a nugget of hope, but a very interesting road to follow or group to follow would be those top levels. So I think the first thing, and for me and for everybody out there, is to go to Ultimate Canada and read that trans policy and compare that to USA Ultimate's trans policy and compare that to UK Ultimate's trans policy. Another thing that I've been recently hooked up to is talking to Athlete Ally, which is an organization in the US, a nonprofit that encourages every athlete to be an activist. I think that particularly we can all be activists and allies in creating a more open space for everyone, no matter their sexuality, no matter their gender.
Yeah, and all the intersections in between.
It's actually, to me, that's the most interesting part of my job. And I learn something new every day about it because, like, if we just stay with what we know, we're never going to be able to grow. We're never going to be able to actually push ourselves somewhere forward in our policies, in our habits, in the way that we support more people without including all of the intersections. We're missing something. There's actually, I don't know if you've seen it, that viral photo that's feminism without intersectionality is just white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, I have that picture in my room, and that's something that you just have to, like, remember that for a white person, for a white woman in this field and in the work that I'm doing, if I don't keep my focus on an intersectionalist framework, then I'm being oppressive and discriminating against other groups mm-hmm. just by nature of society, particularly for the way the states are set up and their racism. So it's something to be very vigilant about.
Yeah. So kind of our last little tidbits for this combo. Is there anything else that you'd like our listeners to know about Ultimate and gender equity?
I think the biggest thing about Ultimate is that it comes from this idea that anybody can play and there's a safe space for everyone. And so I would challenge Ultimate players out there to really ask, safe space for who? And I would challenge new players to go out to these spaces and try out Ultimate and play Ultimate, because there are some really incredible people and community in Ultimate, and not be afraid to push or ask for what you need from the sport. And when it comes to gender equity, I would just kind of go back to this idea of saying, don't say gender equity with the intention of just having equality between women and men, because we have so far to reach beyond even that equality and what that equality is defined by. We have to be very vigilant of people from all different types of backgrounds, and to constantly push ourselves to say, if, you know, we want gender equity, it's not just about female-male binary, it's really about the spectrum of gender. And until we have that spectrum of gender, until that spectrum of gender is supported, not only in the local communities, but also in the Olympics and in the world, when it comes to that mainframe of sports, we're not going to have gender equity. So I would keep people focused on, you know, don't limit yourself to one thing, and really push to be intersectionalist, and really push to be open to that wide non-binary.
Yeah, definitely. This is all extremely important, and I'm really appreciative of your work that you do in the community and beyond. So where can folks find you, and then how can they participate in Upwin Ultimate?
Yeah, so Upwin Ultimate, we have our own website, www.upwindultimate.com. That's going to have all of our information. We have articles, we have videos, we're releasing online courses, like I said, and we're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Upwind Ulti, U-L-T-I, for those out there not in the Ulti, the Ultimate crew. And then you can find me, I'm on Twitter at L-O-Reality, Low Reality, and happy to talk about any of this.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for being here, Laurel. It's great to talk with you and learn more about Upwind Ultimate and talk about gender equity.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks.
Last week in the show, I spoke to Leah Rose Tottenham, co-founder of Radical Spirits, which is a feminist artist collective based in Vancouver. They talked about binary issues regarding witchcraft, and today we continue with witchcraft in relation to cultural appropriation. Besides the binary issues in witchcraft, there might be maybe more issues. Cultural appropriation is something that comes to mind. How would you characterize cultural appropriation in witchcraft?
It's a big topic, and like something that's always a conversation that's happening, especially among like, you know, like my or like our, like this generation of witches. I'd say a lot of tensions. There can be some like, you know, between older generations of witches who maybe come from this time where that wasn't an issue that was on the table. Like nobody was talking. I mean, it was happening, but nobody had a word for it and nobody was talking about it. And I've seen that kind of stuff in the community. Like I remember a few years ago, like I wasn't involved in any of it. I just kind of saw it up on a poster board at a coffee shop. So I can't like claim to know the entire story, but I just remember looking at it and it was for like a local like witch camp. And they had used like some gods or goddess from the Hindu mythology, and I remember there being a lot of like discomfort around that because the group, the witch camp that it was like affiliated with, is mostly like white women, and so it kind of was like, you know, there's all this younger generation of witches that are kind of like, no, that's not okay, and then you have this older generation being like, well, why not, like, you know, we're just honoring the spirituality and being open-minded and having diversity. So it's kind of can be a little bit tenuous sometimes, like between the generations. But I mean, personally, like for me, like the ways that I like to try to keep my practice ethical, like I can totally speak to that. And like what I have to say will probably resonate with like white folks. I identify as white, so. And I'd say, like, the key thing would be to be mindful of the difference between cultural appropriation and cultural exchange, because one is not so great and the other is, like, very rich and can be very beneficial. And the difference there, of course, is an imbalance in power, in many different types of power, social, political. And so when approaching, like, any element of witchcraft or magical tradition or practice that you want to engage with, it's good to kind of ask yourself, like, have I built a meaningful connection based on like reciprocity, mutual benefit, and equal exchange with this cultural or spiritual community that I wish to engage with? And so like really ask yourself that question and like let it settle. And like there's, you know, like we talk about having like your true center or like your it's call it like the truth at the crossroads or like your inner compass. And this is just like the deepest, most part of you where you just, it's like your gut, you know, like that gut feeling, and like really check in with like your truth and ask yourself that question genuinely. And I would say like be prepared for the answer to be no most of the time, which is not always going to be easy. And, you know, like you might not want the answer to be no, but, you know, if you really deeply check in with yourself, like, especially if you're white, you're going to find that the answer is going to often be no. And there's a lot of co-opting and, like, commercialization of other cultures, like spiritual practices and, like, sacred objects. Like, and you see, like, sage bundles and, like, dream catchers for sale somewhere, like Urban Outfitters. You know, like, it's thanks to capitalism, like, we all have access to these types of things. But it's, like, making that choice of, like, whether you should access it, even though it's sitting there readily available for your consumption. It's like, oh, should I consume that? So it's not, you know, just because it's there doesn't mean it's going to be okay to use it. And like often I find like people will be really prickly or like they'll kind of bristle at this, you know, being told, oh no, you can't have that, or oh no, you don't have access to that. And I find that like that bristling or like defensiveness really comes from a place of like, I have this comfortable position of privilege and power, and like I don't want that taken away from me because it's comfortable, and like people want to feel good and they don't want to feel discomfort. And like if you start examining ways in which your magical practice might not be ethical, like it's probably going to be uncomfortable, and it won't feel good, but it's like actually like the discomfort is really necessary, because the discomfort means that you're growing, right? And it's not going to feel good to lose this position of privilege and power, even if it was something that you were unjustly given. But in doing so, you're going to be opening up a lot more space for people who are oppressed and marginalized, and like that's something that they were unjustly given. So it's like just trying to return to this place of balance where, you know, nobody's taking more than they should be, and, you know, marginalized voices are being heard.
There are also self-proclaimed shamans or medicine men or women. If they're not aware of this cultural appropriation themselves, is that something you should make them aware of? Would you advise them to maybe have a conversation with the people whose culture they're practicing?
That, I mean, there's a lot of cultures, I think. Like, I don't know too much about this, so I won't try to speak too much on it, but I know that there's like multiple cultures and backgrounds that do have shamans and, you know, medicine healers. And I mean, I wouldn't want to make any like assumptions on anybody's like identity, you know, like without actually, you know, I wouldn't want to jump at somebody and be like, oh no, you can't claim that, when I don't know them and I don't know where they're from or who they are. So, but I mean, everyone should be responsible for doing their own work and research and figuring out whether they have access to that culture or not. And, you know, sometimes people aren't going to do the best job at assessing that for themselves. But yeah, I think it's great for like other white people to talk to other white people about like, hey, you know, let's talk about this aspect of your practice and like, you know, find out a bit more about each other and come at it from that angle. And then it's not like you're attacking somebody for, you know, what you perceive to maybe be cultural appropriation. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. If you don't know the person, you don't know, but you can always like open a dialogue and then like ease into that conversation. I think it's still really good to have that conversation. And like there's been some times like within the Radical Spirits umbrella that we've had to have that conversation with like other white folks, and like it doesn't go smoothly. Like people get very defensive and like, and with, I mean, it's like it's such a deeply held thing, like your spirituality, that to be told like, oh, this thing that you've been doing, like it's actually not okay, like sometimes people aren't going to be receptive to that immediately. But I mean, we owe it to marginalized cultures and like oppressed people, like as descendants of like super aggressive colonizers, like I think we owe it to them to have those difficult conversations and open the floor for that topic among white folks, because it's also really easy to kind of sit back in your own whiteness and use that as a like an excuse to not have that conversation. It's like, oh well, you know, I don't want to make another white person uncomfortable by like, you know, having this like super uncomfortable conversation where they're probably going to be upset at me and I'm going to have to push back again and they're probably going to be very defensive and it's not going to feel comfortable. But, you know, if you sit back in your own whiteness and go, eh, whatever, like I'll just let that person keep calling themselves a shaman, even though I know they're not from a culture that like has that in its lineage, then, you know, you're just becoming part of the problem. You know, you're just as bad if you don't step up and try to at least start that conversation, because maybe the person will be defensive, but maybe in 2 years they will have kind of grown a little bit and they might go, maybe that is not okay. You know, maybe that time that person, you know, kind of called me in and tried to have that conversation with me, maybe they had, you know, maybe they were right. I don't know.
Have you experienced any gray areas yourself in practicing witchcraft?
For me, like personally, I think I, like a lot of witches, I like to use smoke as like a cleansing tool for like, for humans, for spaces, for, you know, anytime some energy just needs to be moved. And for a long time, and I will admit this, myself and people that I practice with would call this like quote unquote smudging. And then like I learned that, you know, although there are a lot of cultures that use and a lot of spiritual traditions that use smoke as a cleansing tool, that the word smudging, like that specific language, like that belongs to like First Nations indigenous spirituality, and that's like off limits to me. So I remember just like learning that and feeling like, oh gosh, like it's quite embarrassing. But yeah, so I mean, there are tons of folks out there who use smoke and like burning different plants for smoke and using that to cleanse with. But yeah, learning that that word smudging is like not, it's a part of a spirituality that I don't have access to. So I still do the practice. I try to use like plants that are like native to this area that I have like built connection with. So like, I mean, it's not as like beautiful as burning like sweetgrass or something like that, but you know, that's not mine, so I don't do that. But you know, like you can pick lavender, like you can use lemon balm, like stuff that just grows around, and you can build your own relationships with those plants. And just try to avoid like anything that you don't know about. Like also something like Palo Santo, like you can go buy that at the store and, you know, there's like a little blurb on how to use it. But like that comes from South America. That's not like of the land that we live on. So I try not to use it, but I know other folks who do, and that's like their work to figure out if that's okay for them to use. But also like that's like a very powerful and potent substance. And if you just kind of, you know, walk in, grab it and start burning it, like if you don't know how to use this tool properly, it can actually sometimes be harmful. Like the way that it works with energies, like it's very powerful. And if you haven't like educated yourself to be at a level to know how that substance works and how that magic works, then, you know, you can actually maybe end up causing ill. So that's something to keep in mind too.
And how would you advise people to educate themselves, especially when you mentioned that you can just go to an Urban Outfitters and get some sage? It feels normalized then in a way. How can people, what is the advice you have for this?
I would honestly, like I connect to a lot of resources through like Instagram. Like I feel like everybody uses it, and like there's tons of people you can follow that will educate you on witchcraft. Just doing some Google searches, like really just trying to find a way to listen to the voices like of the marginalized culture themselves and not just reading people speaking on their behalf. I mean, the books at the library are great. You might not find like super up-to-date content on stuff like cultural appropriation, but you might find a few items.
And you also mentioned the smudging previously and how that is a cultural appropriation regarding the language usage. Mm-hmm. Any advice or tips on how to find the right vocabulary in practicing witchcraft?
I'm not sure. That's really like the most, like just for my life personally, that's like the one example with language that really came up. I mean, there's more stuff that I can think of regarding language when it comes to like the binary.
Is this something people made you aware of regarding the language, or is this something you find out yourself?
I think I was reading, it's kind of a mixture. Like, I think I was reading either like somebody's blog or like through like an Instagram post, or like I go to a magic conference every year in Portland called the Northwest Magic Conference. Yeah, it's just like this huge gathering of like witches, healers, like people from all corners of wherever they come from. And there's lots of good conversations that happen there. Like the group that puts it on, or there's an individual that puts it on, and like they're queer, and like a lot of the folks who attend are queer, and there's all different, like it's very diverse. And the keynote speaker last year was somebody who was talking about, I don't remember the topic exactly, but she really touched on a lot of issues surrounding like how it feels to be a person of color in a magic community. So I find that that space teaches me a lot, or kind of just gets me going on different topics that I'm interested in, or, you know, connecting to different people who then, you know, post content online that you can read up on and kind of follow their trains of thought and like their explorations around like how to be ethical, like within a magical context. So I think that's probably where like most of my learning comes from, is like my peers. And we're all just kind of, it's like it's kind of this thing like we're all unlearning this system, like all at the same time, like we're all unlearning white supremacy and racism, like all together, and like unlearning what our colonial history has taught us, unlearning that we have access to like any spiritual tradition that we want.
Any last advice to give to those practicing witchcraft or interested in practicing witchcraft?
Yeah, I'd say like, I mean, I identify as a solitary witch, so I do most of my work alone, like most of my rituals, spells, like prayer, stuff like that. I do it mostly on my own, but I do, like, there's this like certain special kind of magic that comes from like collaborating with others. So I'd say, like, definitely try to find yourself like a little spiritual community, whether it be in real life, whether it be like over, you know, social media, or somehow like just connect with your peers. And that's going to be like where most of your growth and like learning and healing happens, is like through connecting with like other people who are on the same kind of similar journey and path. And like, you know, so much good can come from joining forces with other people who are just like into building a connection with nature and like doing the hard healing work for themselves and for others, and, you know, standing up for marginalized groups through like political action, because that's like super magical as well.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the show and sharing your story with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
So you're a member of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 with discounts on Commercial Drive at
Audio Pile, High Life Records, Mintage, People's Co-op Bookstore, Stormcrow Tavern, The Rio Theater, JQ Clothing Limited, and Bone Rattle Music Limited.
Newspapers and magazines did you regularly read to stay informed and to understand the
I've
world?
Read most of them, again, with a great appreciation for the press, for the media.
But like, what ones specifically?
All of them.
Want to know more than Sarah Palin? Join CITR's Current Affairs Coordinator, Alex DeBoer, every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. in room 2514 in the AMS Nest to learn best practices for covering local current affairs topics for radio. The weekly training sessions will cover writing for radio, determining newsworthiness, media ethics, interviewing, writing balanced stories, and more.
Thank you. You're tuned in to Intersections here on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory here at the beautiful University of British Columbia campus. My name is Mel Woods, this year's Gender Empowerment Collective Coordinator. With not a lot to do today, we had a jam-packed show. You heard interviews from Maxime and Addison about cultural appropriation in witchcraft and gender equity and ultimate frisbee. If those aren't community radio topics waiting to happen, I don't know what are really interesting conversations and hopefully got you out there thinking about sport and what it means to be a woman or a non-binary or a trans person in sport, and also witchcraft. And if it's something that you're more interested in learning about, reach out to the folks that Addison and Maxime talked to. And if you missed part of the show, you can check out the podcast online, citr.ca. All of our back episodes are there, where you'll be able to just indulge in your listening pleasures. Because, yes, super great, super interesting conversations happening today. Other thing, like I mentioned at the top of the show, I just want to give a nice little shout. It's not current affairs, but it was making me happy this week. And that was the Silence Breakers being named Times Person of the Year. We've talked a lot about the Me Too and sexual assault on this show. Sometimes it's been quite heavy. And often we've ended the show with reminding you to take care of yourselves. And I will always end with that again, like, do take care of yourself wherever you are. But I hope some little bit of news, it might be that, it might be something else, has made your day a little bit brighter wherever you may be. And with that, we're coming to the end of the program today. It's been a bumping one, let me tell you. And again, big thanks to Maxime and Addison for putting together those interviews, and for the whole collective, for everything that they do. It's been a grand old time. Also, a side shout out to our sister station, CJSW in Calgary, for letting me use their studios to put this episode together. Lots of holiday magic sent across the Rocky Mountains to them. So if you're ever in Calgary, give them a listen, give them some love. And with that, we're going to be coming to the end. I got one more track for you. We're going to listen to a little bit of Grimes. We heard some Grimes earlier in the show with that cover from the Tegan and Sarah, the Con covers, but we're going to listen to some classic Grimes right here. And you know what? We're going to listen to a banger. This is one of my favorite albums altogether, frankly, and it was an album of the year when it first came out in 2015. I'm talking about Art Angels, of course. And you know what? I'm just gonna go straight off and play the banger from there. This is Flesh Without Blood. The show is Intersections. The station, CITR. Democracy Watch is up next, and enjoy that one. Keep it rolling in Radioland.